Good morning. My name is Lucille Martin, and that was my husband Brent, who came up with me. We have three children, ages 9 to 3, and we live on a small country property close to Mount Forest, one of our dreams come true. Life has been good to us the last few years. It is good to be here. Good in the sense that it blesses me to see so many people in our communities that care about this. Like Dave, I'm also aware that for some here, the kind of things he has spoken about this morning may have been a direct hit into your crushing devastation and anguish. Or you may be sitting there feeling completely numb, or somewhere halfway in between. And either way, it's real, and I want you to know that I care, that we care. Abuse is a topic that I feel deeply about. It's a topic that is close to my heart. Abuse survivor is a term that is used sometimes. It sounds horrible, like we almost didn't make it, like we need to live the rest of our life damaged or handicapped. But you know, that is too true. With the exception of abuse to our physical bodies in obvious places, to those around us, we look no different the next day, or the next week, or the next year. But in our hearts, and in our brains, and in our body memory, the word survivor holds true meaning. It happened, or is happening. And we are still here. We feel alienated from the rest of the world. They go on. Our world feels deadly silent, yet stormy, and we are locked into it. What if it happens again? Or we expect the same treatment tomorrow? The fear and distress is a dark cloud daily, nightly. What if there's multiple forms of abuse going on at the same time? Which unfortunately is not uncommon. What if this has been the way of life since before we remember? I'm going to start at age 3. Already having experienced enough of this broken world to be feeling alone and unprotected by then and very vulnerable, one beautiful summer day changed my world in unimaginable degrees. Life inside changed to winter that day, for many calendars. It changed my safety in my outer world a number of degrees, and hijacked my inner world in every aspect. Utter devastation. My belief system that I need to take care of myself because no one else will was firmly cemented. That I was alone. And alone was the only safe way. Allowing people into my heart only brought hurt. Unable to handle the enormity and complexity of it all, I involuntarily totally blocked that abuse event and several repeat ones. I have very few memories of my childhood years, and the ones I do have, even ones that have no reason to be unhappy, are flat and lifeless. Heart safely locked away, yet living the nightmare. Heavy, dark, alone, sad, depressed. No one loves me. Used, worthless. For 13 years, I would have told you in all sincerity that no, I was not sexually abused. I remember my mom going over a workbook of yell and tell material and feeling weird. But nothing surfaced. Life went on. Upper grade school years added to the living nightmare. There was no safe place, anywhere. Nowhere at home, nowhere at school, nowhere in anyone's heart, though many people loved me. Another abuse, and again. On guard every moment, everywhere. No rest, no escape. This was life on the inside of me. On the outside, I talked. I smiled. Nobody knew. Nobody had a clue. At age 14, my world started to shift, though I sure didn't realize it at the time. A shift for the good, but it was going to get worse first, much worse. One Sunday morning, I encountered a girl my age. We sensed instant connection and started weekly phone calls every Thursday evening until we joined the youth. We're still so amazed that both our moms let us. I don't remember much of what we talked about. My educated guess is it didn't always sound beneficial, but it was. It was the first time that I could be real about what life was like with someone, and she heard and understood. I could begin to express, and she was okay with it. And she was okay with me. She also confided her struggles. She trusted me. I mattered to her. Connection. My heart started feeling safe enough around some friends that I was able to have fun with them. And I discovered they enjoyed being with me and I with them. Life was starting to seep into an otherwise cold and unfeeling world. God kept turning the key in the lock. At 15, another Jonathan and David friendship sprang up. Today, I specifically ask God to bless those two friends who have walked with me through many deep waters, so sacrificially and supportively, and continue to. They did not love because it was easy to do. Many, many people have poured much into me, loved me unconditionally, greatly influenced my life, and pointed and led me to higher ground. And I thank God for you. You know who you are. I wouldn't be standing here today had you not allowed yourself to be used. People whose eyes and hearts are open to those around them. People who have compassion like Jesus. Joining the youth, I put on my party disposition. It was a safe place to get away and just have good, clean fun. Some of it being my personality unleashed, and some of it was trying to drown out the pain and the dark times. I put my all into weekends for a few years with a completely different face at home. At 16, the first memories of the abuse surfaced, with life, feeling, and memories all starting to emerge. It was too much. I clearly remember writhing in bed night after night in knifing, stabbing, emotional pain, and getting 2 to 4 hours of sleep a night for months. At home, I was black depressed, barely able to even care for myself. Inevitably, I couldn't go on like that. My energy to party ran out, and life turned all black. I felt like a broken down car when I was supposed to be in the prime of life. It felt like everybody else was driving on. Many Sundays I felt like standing up in church, throwing my Bible at the minister, because what he was saying just wasn't true for me. Who he said God was, and who God felt like to me, were two different beings. The kind of thing he said God delights in doing for his children, God didn't seem to be doing for me. I felt like even God had rejected me and had trashed me. Utter hopelessness, anger, agony. My two friends were concerned, and one set me up with a trusted couple to talk. I was ready and desperate for a lifeline. It was good to have a place to talk, and life got worse. I became increasingly more suicidal. My parents and mentors convinced me to go see a doctor, and I began on medication. A little later, my doctor doubled the dose, since it just wasn't doing much. One night, I was driving home from a youth event. A familiar road, an S-bend. I did the first curve okay, but somewhere between then and the next curve, I completely blacked out. The driver of an oncoming vehicle witnessed extreme speed coming around the second curve, and our minivan make a rapid descent down a steep embankment on two wheels, narrowly missing guardrails and trees, and landing snugly between. Nobody understood how I made it there safely. They also weren't sure if they believed the blackout story or if it was attempted suicide. The next morning, my 18th birthday, found us in Grand River Hospital waiting to see a psychiatrist. She said my medication dose was way too high, causing the blackout. She also said she knows Mennonites are very stoic, so there's usually more going on than meets the eye. She was probably not wrong. I was admitted to the psychiatric ward, where they tried several strong meds in rapid succession, trying to find one that worked. Mostly all I remember from that time is feeling very drugged. Finally, I slept a bit more on the medication, just before the 2 weeks were up where they'd have to send me on to a bigger hospital. They released me with my promise of going for counseling. My two friends took me to youth events for a span where it was needed. I vividly remember one night when they brought me home. I convinced them it was such a beautiful night that I wanted to walk in the lane. I knew my parents were listening for me to arrive, and the guardianship would be handed over to them. And I needed a bit of space in between there. It took a bit of convincing. And though not totally sure it was the right thing to do, they did let me off at the end of the lane. I waved and set my face to walk in the lane, then took off running down the road as soon as they were out of sight. It was a night I don't think I'll ever forget. Neither the counseling the hospital set up nor the medication seemed to be helping. So I eventually discontinued both with no ripples. My name came up on the waiting list at Haven of Rest in PA just days before my 19th birthday. After several months there, beginning to find and know God for who he really was, and working through the abuses and other things that were beneath the surface of my depression, I felt like a new person, feeling at rest, feeling peaceful, feeling joyful, were new life experiences. I remember noticing how beautiful and vibrant the leaves were that fall, and I heard for the first time in my life how they crunched beneath my feet, and I heard the melodious music of the songbirds. I enjoyed my first job in a store immensely and promised to teach, a dream come true. A small class of 7 students, which was a good thing, because around my 20th birthday, I felt like I was searching and needing help. Again, I was scared I was turning into a counseling junkie. But I now knew what it was like to try to go it alone. And I also knew what it was like to go it with someone. I knew which path led to healing. One can only do or handle so much in one sitting, and it was time to go deeper, further. God opened doors, and kind friends took me in. My first sessions happened while weeding the garden that summer. Some more places or new levels of deep, dark pain were opened up, and the struggle of where to go with it was intense. In the midst of excruciating pain, I came face to face with Jesus. God, who walked the earth in the man's body, could I trust him? Why did he want to be with me anyway? What was he after? What was there to stop him from winning me over, just taking what he wanted and walking away like the others did? The scary part, the answer for me was nothing. It is hard to believe the truth when it has not been true in your life. At this level of pain and vulnerability, I could lean on nothing in my life before this to believe that it wouldn't happen again. The battle raged intensely. I knew I was at the end of myself. But do you know how hard it is to choose to turn toward, to trust and open up to a man, when everything within you screams no? All your red flags and warning bells are going berserk, and all you can think, feel, or remember physically or emotionally is drama. It was the hardest thing I've done in my life. But that man was Jesus. He completely understood where I was at and why. He was oh so gentle. He never forced. He waited and loved. He spoke healing and truth into the pain. And those dark places became permeated with his presence and light. It was also the most blessed choice I have ever made. It was the key that changed my life from surviving the abuse to thriving after abuse. There was some really good years, and my mentor friends were there for me whenever I got stuck or needed a boost. I fully embraced singlehood. It was where I wanted to be. I absolutely did not want to get married. I did not realize until Brent's letter came on another beautiful summer day, shaking up my world, that God must have been working and preparing. I could see that subconsciously I'd been softening, that I could actually give the idea room to be a possibility. I was again face to face with trusting a man, and this one wasn't Jesus. If I said yes, I would open myself up to a serious potential to hurt me. It would mean voluntarily opening up and giving him every aspect of myself. Why in the world would I do that? But having made the hard choice to trust and go with Jesus, and the healing that brought helped me make this one. Brent possessed many of the same character qualities of Jesus, knowing my pain and understanding why, being oh so gentle, inviting but never forcing, loving and waiting. Did he hurt me? Yes, there was times where we needed to skip a date to give me time to sort things out. I faced the choice of whether I would love and be loved in spite of the hurt, over and over again. Did I hurt him? Absolutely. But God used our relationship to further heal my broken heart and belief systems. After all this healing, I was amazed at the amount of nightmares, flashbacks, and so much body memory that showed up that first year of our marriage. I'm so thankful Brent has a passion for hearts in pain. I thank and bless him for how he laid down his life for me like that, for all the damage he's paid for over and over that he did not cause. But, and I say this for both of us, it was so worth it. Does all of this mean it never surfaces or interferes anymore? There's one kind of touch that I still cannot handle, but we can avoid it. There's a sound, I hear it very rarely, that still flips me right back into the abuse if it catches me off guard and I didn't see it coming, and I need to talk myself back into the present. I keep working at it whenever God brings up another piece or another layer, each one an opportunity for greater healing. These past 2 years, some new flashbacks have surfaced, leading me into another angle of it all very recently, and I'm excited for the freedom and life in those areas that God brings with healing. I have felt the enemy's strong intent to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have also experienced Jesus' triumphing mission to free the captives, to heal the brokenhearted, to bind the wounds, to bring abundant life. The more I experienced God's love, the less I feared it. True love is the most beautiful, the most pure, the most holy thing in the world when it is untainted by sin and selfishness. True love truly cares. The words redeemed and restored hold deep, deep meaning for me. They hold the depth of God's heart for the abused. He came to set at liberty them that are bruised. I cannot forgive and forget, but I will forgive and remember. I will remember what God loves to do, has done, and will continue to do with damaging, hurtful events and memories, and shattered hearts and lives. I will comfort others with the comfort wherewith I have been comforted. God grieves deeply with us when others' choices leave us in ruin. And he invites us to come into his presence. If you can't find him, or it is too fearful to meet him alone, find someone to help you. His eyes are gentle. His face is all compassion. He will not force or manipulate you. His heartbeat is for you to be able to know and experience how he is different than those who have hurt you. Instead of lust, he is love. Instead of being out to get what he wants, he gives us his best. Instead of snuffing out your light and leaving you to sit in darkness, the light of his presence comes to sit with you. Instead of stealing from you, he gives you far more than you ever had. Instead of overpowering you, he lets you make the first move. He respects your personhood, your voice, your very being. Instead of lies, there is truth. You are precious to him. Instead of heartbreaking pain, there is healing and hope. Instead of leaving you aching, dirtied, and bleeding, he takes away your shame and false guilt and puts the shattered pieces of your heart back together again with a depth and a beauty that was not there before. Instead of death, there is life, and life abundantly. Come, let us seek him together.